It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Iraqi forces continuing to fight remaining Islamic State militants in Mosul even as officials celebrate victory. Former U.S. Ambassador and Washington Institute for Near East Policy scholar James Jeffrey.
I'm sure there are still individual ISIS soldiers floating around in Mosul or close to it. And certainly there are stay-behind people and essentially folks who are going to do terrorist things. But all in all, Mosul has been liberated.
Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi went to Mosul to congratulate the armed forces on their success. A U.S.-Russia brokered ceasefire in southwest Syria is the first peacemaking effort in the Syrian civil war by President Trump. VOA asked Trinity University Middle East scholar David Lesh if this is a diplomatic breakthrough.
I would not consider it a diplomatic breakthrough. It's encouraging if it's followed up with workable details and an agreement that actually works and maybe something that is transferred to other parts of the country. It seems to me that Putin and Trump in their meeting in Europe were eager to show something out of the meeting, and this seems to be it.
In that meeting on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Germany, Mr. Trump says he strongly pressed President Putin about Russia's meddling in last year's U.S. election, and it was now time to work constructively with Moscow. South Sudan has marked its sixth year of independence with no official celebration as it grapples with civil war, as well as mass displacement, accusations of war crimes, and famine. About a third of the nation's 11 million people have been forced from their homes. 2 million are being housed in neighboring countries, 6 million in need of food aid. This is VOA News. During his first official visit to Ukraine, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the U.S. has told Russia it must take the first steps to de-escalate violence in eastern Ukraine. Tillerson detailed how the U.S. would like to help move things forward.
We are going to be exploring ways to change the status quo because continuing to leave things the way they are is simply not acceptable. So we have to reinvigorate these talks to move them forward. And that is the purpose of our engagement and the purpose of Ambassador Volker's appointment. So we're hopeful that we can change this dynamic and begin to make progress.
Tillerson has named former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Kurt Volker, to serve as special representative for Ukraine negotiations. Reporters caught up with Volker to ask about his Ukraine plans.
We need to have a Ukraine that is sustainable, resilient, prosperous, strong democracy, so that it'll be attractive to the regions in the east and where disinformation and propaganda attacks don't really have much traction.
Volker, who was traveling with Tillerson to Ukraine, will also engage regularly with parties handling the Ukraine negotiations under the so-called Normandy format. Those nations are Germany, France, Russia, and Ukraine. United States will step up pressure on China to ensure it enforces sanctions against North Korea in the wake of Pyongyang's recent missile launch. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley said while the United States wants to avoid conflict, it is committed to halting North Korea's nuclear drive. China is North Korea's biggest ally and trading partner. So far, China has expressed its condemnation of the recent launch along with other countries, but it has not yet said anything definitive about sanctions. French President Emmanuel Macron and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull met in Paris to celebrate a multi-billion-dollar deal between the two countries to build Australian submarines in France. Turnbull remembered the long-standing relationship between Australia and France, citing Australian efforts in France during World War I.
This is the largest and most ambitious military project in Australia's history, and it is a matter of great moment, historical moment, that 100 years on from those shared sacrifices, from that alliance, when men from Australia came to the other end of the world to fight for freedom.
Macron said the submarine deal with Australia was an honor for the French industry. Get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Elections Commission is being taken to task over what some are calling its selective enforcement of a code of conduct law.
We know that he should not have been rejected, so we know the Election Commission was wrong in that respect. And we're going to proceed to the Supreme Court of Liberia to have that decision reviewed and hopefully reversed.
Charles Bromsky is the presidential candidate of Liberia's Liberty Party. There's a surge of independent candidates in next month's Kenyan presidential and parliamentary elections. The number of refugees and cattle fleeing Boko Haram in Nigeria's Taraba State spirals, and Zambia formally asked Britain to extradite a social media critic of the Zambian government.
What we want the British government to do is to extradite Mr. Ali Mwetwa to Zambia so that he could answer allegations of incitement and extremist views he's been posting and inciting violence in the run-up to elections.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, and South Sudan rebels criticized President Salva Kiir for canceling Sunday's Independence Day celebrations. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports in our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The National Elections Commission of Liberia is expected to respond today, Monday, to a petition asking the Supreme Court to issue a writ of prohibition against the Elections Commission for violating the rights of Abu Kamara, a candidate for parliament, in this year's election. The commission rejected Mr. Kamara's candidacy because he did not resign his government post 2 years before, a violation of the code of conduct. The commission also rejected the participation of Mr. Harrison Kanwie, vice presidential candidate for the Liberty Party. Charles Bromsky is the presidential candidate of the Liberty Party. He says the Elections Commission was wrong and his party is planning to ask the Supreme Court to review and possibly overturn the Election Commission's decision.
I do not know Mr. Kamara's case, the complaint that he has filed. I haven't read the pleadings, but I can tell you from the perspective of Liberty Party's vice standard bearer, the law provides that a public official who desires to run, now a vice presidential candidate cannot desire because he is selected by someone. Only a presidential candidate like me can have this desire to run. Because the law cannot be unreasonable. I asked a man 2 months ago to say, please be my running mate. And he says, okay. So the law could not have intended for him to have resigned 2 years ago when he didn't even know that I would have asked him to be my running mate.
Some people say that perhaps the code of conduct is being selectively enforced. What's your view?
Well, I don't know whether it's being selectively enforced. What I do know is that it's being enforced wrongly in respect of certain candidates. It's either because the Election Commission is grossly incompetent or they're partisan. I can speak about the experience of the Liberty Party, where on Thursday, I believe it was the 6th of July, we submitted our package, my running mate and myself, on the evening. After we left the National Election Commission, a Unity Party person had circulated on the internet that my running mate was rejected. We did not get any official notice of that until about 24 hours later. We got a notice saying that my running mate nomination was rejected. We know that he should not have been rejected, so we know the Election Commission was wrong in that respect, and we're going to proceed to the Supreme Court of Liberia to have that decision reviewed and hopefully reversed.
So you said you might take an appeal to the court. When do you hope to do that? In the meantime, time seems to be running out.
The law says that the Election Commission should investigate. They didn't investigate. As I said to you, we filed on the afternoon of the 6th. And the 7th of July, we got a letter and said the man was rejected. You know, one of the reasons why an investigation is required in such instant is that there may be an exculpatory reason. In the case of Mr. Kanwie, my running mate, like I said earlier, the exculpatory reason for him not conforming with the law is that he could not have been expected to resign 2 years before he knew he would be my running mate. We say in Liberia, when the law is susceptible to two interpretations. And one of those interpretations would make the law look ugly, and the other would uphold the sanctity of the law. The court would be duty bound to go by what makes the law look good. And so no reasonable person would expect a vice presidential candidate to have contemplated 2 years before he would ask that he would be someone's running mate in order to resign.
You said the code of conduct, you agree with the Supreme Court, is constitutional. There, some Liberians, we are saying there's so much confusion brought up by the ruling of the court and the implementation by the Elections Commission that they fear a lot about this election.
I had a press conference on Saturday where I appealed to President Sirleaf to take control of things happening in the country. President Sirleaf knows where this country is coming from. She came to power in Liberia right at the end of a bitter civil war that is said to have been started because of election fraud. And I'm sure she wouldn't want to leave power with us at the same place where we started off. So she needs to help, along with the members of the international community, our development partners, our friends, to ensure that the elections are free and fair. There are still people in Liberia who are prone to violence. We don't want to give them an excuse to do what should not be done in our country.
Charles Pramskin is the presidential candidate of Liberia's Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Kenyans will vote next month for positions at all levels of government. But there is something different on the ballot this year, a surge in the number of independent candidates. A quarter of the more than 15,000 people cleared to run for the office of the Electoral Commission are independents. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi on what is driving this trend.
The governorship of Nairobi County is among the most hotly contested races this year, given the importance of the capital. Peter Kenneth is one of five candidates challenging the incumbent for the seat. Three of them, including Kenneth, are running as independents. The former MP ran for president in 2013 under the banner of the Kenya National Congress, but he didn't make the cut during this year's primaries.
The big parties conspire against individuals, but I think you can see with this particular sham, it was across the board many of the leading political parties. So you have more independent candidates than the political parties have. And what will be a lasting ramifications is that in future people will not go for party nominations.
That remains to be seen. These are only the second nationwide elections since 2010, when Kenya's new constitution allowed people to run as independents. Some voters are embracing the added choice.
It's not about party, because at the end of the day, party will not solve out my issues. I have to look at a leader who can look at the nature of the young people, a leader who can fight for the environment, education, security.
Another gubernatorial candidate for Nairobi County, Miguna Miguna, goes door to door to sell his policies. He notes that being independent comes with its own challenges.
The first major challenge, obviously, is that changing a people's mindset takes a lot of effort and time. And we just had the constitution ratified in 2010. Secondly, the so-called established parties, which are fictional constructs, unfortunately have a lot of money.
The ruling Jubilee Coalition and the opposition National Super Alliance continue to dominate the political landscape. But this year's primaries were plagued with allegations of irregularities and favoritism, leading to court challenges. The governor of Kiambu County, William Kabogo, broke off from Jubilee to run for re-election as an independent. He says the newly formed Kenya Alliance of Independent Candidates counts nearly 5,000 members.
People are beginning to now think about candidates and not forums, not parties, not euphoria. And if this happens successfully in terms of the number of people we get into parliament or the number of people who will succeed in this general election having participated as independent candidates, then that will create a different level in terms of how mature we are in electioneering.
Kenyans will have their say at the polls August 8th. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Today is Monday, July 10th, and I'm James Butt in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The Zambian government has officially asked the British government to extradite social media critic Larry Mwitwa, a Zambian who resides in London. Mwitwa is a supporter of opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development. Presidential spokesman Amos Chanda says what finally broke the camel's back is Mwitwa's latest posting praising the fire last week that destroyed the Lusaka City market, Zambia's largest market.
What we want the British government to do is to extradite Mr. Larry Mwitwa to Zambia so that he could answer allegations of incitement and extremist views. He's been posting and inciting violence in the run-up to elections. He would ask people to burn one poster or burn one public building and says, if you do this and you provide evidence, I'll send money through Western Union. Evidence exists where people have burnt two posters and they have sent that money. The latest incident is where he picks a picture of a market burning and he posts on Facebook and celebrates that and says to other people, can we burn more public buildings? So clearly he's been accused of crimes of incitement by the Zambian police. So because he's based in the UK, we do not know his status now, whether he's Zambian or British, but whichever way, extradition treaty exists between the United Kingdom and Zambia, and the request is that he must be extradited to come and account for his action.
I don't know what the situation about the media and or freedom of speech in your country, but in most Western countries like the United States where we are, people have the freedom to post information, to put information on social media, even write opinions in the newspaper expressing their views. So to say that he should be extradited for exercising something that he has the freedom to do, isn't your government overreaching?
If, James, today you posted on your Facebook an incitement that you know where the American battleship is and you incite people, go and bend them, go and shoot them. No, there are crimes of incitement in this country. That's not freedom of expression. It's purely committing crime. It's asking people to bend public infrastructure. That's not freedom of expression. The crimes of incitement we are citing, there is a law that is common in the UK and in Zambia. There can never be freedom of expression where somebody incites people to damage public buildings and they go ahead and damage that building. That is a crime. It's a crime of incitement.
It's your government, the Zambian government. Are you concerned that this kind of information for which you want Mr. Mwitwa extradited, how much impact is it having on investment, investors coming to your country? Or because I think I might have read somewhere where this seems to be the case.
Yeah, Mr. Mwitwa is actually campaigning to damage investor sentiment, to try and paint a picture like it was on fire and that the imminent fires and cases of arson and lawlessness is prevalent. That is exactly why we are looking for them. I heard the Prime Minister, Theresa May, saying, look, technology companies like Google and that must do more to help curb crimes of incitement after the Manchester bombing. She outlined steps how she is going to get technology companies to cooperate more in order to curb extremism. That is exactly what we are doing.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. At least 6,000 people and 2,000 cattle fleeing conflict in Nigeria's Taraba State have been trapped under difficult humanitarian conditions in Cameroonian border villages. Dozens of the refugees are reported to have died, and Cameroon medical staff are calling for assistance to care for the survivors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Ata, a Cameroon border village that hosts close to 4,000 refugees.
20 refugees have just arrived at the Ata Catholic Health Center. They look tired, hungry, and thirsty after traveling long distances on foot from Nigeria's Taraba State. Their spokesman, 53-year-old Bello Dewa Omaru, says they are fleeing violent conflicts between the Mambilas and Fulani Muslim herdsmen.
Most of my people has gone down to Cameroon. The Mambila people wanted to wipe off the Fulani generation in the whole of that plateau. We try to calm our people. We don't think this thing will at least escalate to this extent. We don't think Mambila people, people that we stayed with them for 100 years, we don't think these people will hurt us to that extent and say they will wipe off completely.
A majority of those arriving are women and children. Jean-Marie Kwe, medical officer of the health center, says they no longer have enough space and medication to treat the wounded.
Nous avons trouvé qu'il y en a les blessés. Il y en a ceux qui ont perdu.
He says many of the refugees come in with wounds inflicted during fighting, while others suffer memory loss because they saw entire families being killed. He says many women delivered babies while escaping from Nigeria, and some others delivered the same day they arrived in Cameroon and need urgent medical attention. The Cameroon Red Cross has deployed its local staff to the border area. Moïse Nosam Lemi is its representative in Atta.
La Croix-Rouge camerounaise a commencé le recensement des réfugiés venant du Nigeria.
He says the Cameroon Red Cross is doing a head count of the refugees from Nigeria and educating the local population and traditional rulers not to be hostile towards them. He says the refugees need help because many of them have lost their parents, their houses, and their cattle. He says they do not have the means to reach out to the 3,847 refugees in Atta and surrounding villages who need help. Justine Monshili, the most senior Cameroon government official in the area, says while waiting for support from humanitarian agencies and the government of Cameroon, he has taken steps to assure the people's safety.
J'ai demandé à ça qu'on ouvre l'école, les salles de l'école publique pour les casés.
He says he has given instructions for schools at the border regions to be opened for the refugees and asked all traditional rulers to welcome them for humanitarian purposes. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Atta, Cameroon.
South Sudan rebels have criticized the President Salva Kiir for canceling Sunday's Independence Day celebrations. The president said he was canceling the country's 6 independence celebrations because of the tough economic crisis affecting the country. But Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, says President Kiir is to blame for South Sudanese not being able to celebrate their independence.
We expected more this year. We thought that this year, maybe South Sudanese, especially those in the refugee camp, the displaced area would be in South Sudan to celebrate the Independence Day of this year. But unfortunately, we have been turned out of Juba and the war continued. Up to today, there are more refugees, there are many refugees, many displaced South Sudanese across the whole world due to this war. So the Independence Day of this year is really not very good. We so regret and we would have thought something better could happen, but it didn't happen because the government does not want peace. The government does not want civilians to celebrate the independence peacefully. They continue harassing, they continue killing, they continue attacking us.
President Salva Kiir, speaking to the nation, says that he was canceling the celebration because of the economic crisis that South Sudan is going through. Your comment?
Last year, he said the same thing. He said it was because of the economic crisis, so he's not going to be able to, there's no money to fund the celebration. This year, he's saying the same thing. How would you celebrate Independence Day when there is no security in the country? The president should live in fear to the citizens. He should live in fear to civilians. The civilian he's torturing. The civilian he doesn't care about. He should tell them clearly that I am responsible for you people not celebrating Independence Day. Instead of going around the bush saying, it is because of economic crisis. No. Who brought the economic crisis into the country? It is him. He wanted that fight. He wanted to make sure he sticks to power. He doesn't want any person to challenge him, whether it is politically or military. He doesn't want that challenge. He wants to maintain that seat and stay up there. So he wants everyone to be out of the country so that he enjoys it by himself. That's why the whole refugees, the whole South Sudanese who are abroad, who are outside, who are inside the country, the POC camps being displaced into the farm, they are not enjoying it now. So it is not the economic situation that stopped the celebration of the Independence Day, but it is his own activities that stop us from celebrating the Independence Day.
President Salva Kiir called on the international community, including IGAD, to support the national dialogue process that he has initiated, saying it is the only option for South Sudan to address all the differences that caused the civil war now.
The national dialogue is not meant to bring peace into this country, into the country, but it is meant to achieve the goals of Salva Kiir and the Gain Council of Elders. That is to continue ruling and continue corrupting the country. The national dialogue does not call for accountability. We know Salva Kiir government and the soldiers have been causing a lot of atrocities, killing civilians, raping women and innocent children, displacing people. But this call for accountability, and the national dialogue does not address that and do not address that. So Salva Kiir wants to run away from responsibility. That's why we bring the issue of the national dialogue. We, the SPLIO, are not into the national dialogue.
Lieutenant Colonel Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He said he was speaking with me from the Ugandan-South Sudan border. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with results of the CAF Champions League matches that was played across various venues on the continent this past weekend. 8 quarterfinalists have emerged following the conclusion of the group stages of matches. Mamelodi Sundowns were held to a 1-1 draw by AS Vita in the final Group C match on Sunday evening. That result means Sundowns finished second on the log and advanced into the quarterfinals to face Group D winners Wydad Casablanca. At the start, the Olympic de Raids, aspirants of Tunisia, were 4-0 winners over St. George and will now meet Egyptian side Al Ahly in the quarterfinals between the 8th to the 10th of September 2017. Elsewhere, Recreativo Libolo of Angola grabbed a quarterfinal spot despite being held 0-0 at home by Samoa of Egypt in the last Group C match. Al Hilal Obeid, the leaders ahead of the final series of mini-league fixtures, were disqualified on Friday after FIFA banned Sudan for government interference in football. Also out is Egyptian giant Zamalek, who could only manage a 2-2 draw at home to Al Ahly Tripoli. And finally, in Group C, Algeria saw Usma defeat Caps United to seal top spot. They will now face Mozambique's Favoriviero Biera in the quarterfinals, while Tripoli will battle Etoile du Sahel. Zimbabwe claimed the record 5th COSAFA Castle Cup with a deserved 3-1 victory over Zambia in the final played at the Royal Boafokeng Sports Palace in South Africa's Northwest Province on Sunday. Zimbabwe have been the best team in the tournament, playing 6 matches in 14 days and scoring an impressive 19 goals in the process. It was tough on Zambia, who entered the competition at the quarterfinal stage and had an impressive campaign but could not contain the confident Zimbabweans in the decider. Harambee Stars coach Stanley Okumbi is set to name an all-star team later today ahead of a historic tour of the Spanish La Liga beginning July 16th through to July 25. The tour is fully sponsored by the Spanish La Liga as part of a partnership between the world's leading football league and the Sportpesa Premier League. In Nigeria, the Nigerian League Management Company, which oversees the Nigerian Professional Football League, has rescheduled a match involving Remo Stars and FC Ifeanyi Ubah. This was after 16 first-team players of Remo Stars Football Club fell sick as a result of food poisoning. The match was initially scheduled for Sunday and will not take place on Tuesday. Remo Stars are bottom in the Nigerian Professional Football League with 27 points from 27 games, while FC Ifeanyi Ubah are 6th on the log with 41 points from 27 games. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, July 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. I am James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very productive week.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.